Hello, ghouls and ghoulettes, and welcome to the Gospel of Ghost, the podcast that aims to bring the lore and narrative of Ghost to the forefront of their music. My name is Niall, and today I'm joined by a very special guest. He does the music for the show. He has made an album. He goes by the name of Bison Music. It's Hector.
Thank you for having me, Niall.
No, my pleasure, man, my pleasure. As I said, my listeners should be very familiar with your work by now. That it's you've done all of the openings since I went back and updated the previous seasons. You know, I love your Opus Medley and your Infestissima Medley. It's For the Love of Ghost is what it's called. Yes, that's what it is, For the Love of Ghost. I worked so much with them on my PC, it's just called Opus Medley and Infestissima Medley.
Yeah, that was good. I think when I first posted it, I think you're one of the first engagements I had on Twitter and Instagram, and I thought, oh wow, this guy's starting this podcast, and it's literally collided perfect timing.
It was really good timing, yeah. And he promises to make a season three intro.
unbelievable, straight in there with an early committal.
I'm joking, but that's if you unreal. Don't, they're gonna be disappointed.
Do you know what, man? I went for a quick run before doing this because I was thinking I've got to level my nerves a bit because this is, you know, this is really cool for me to do this. Anyway, on my run round, I'm thinking, is he gonna ask me? I was listening to Meliora and I was thinking, sonically, I can't bring anything to the table with this one. They had Trump money for this album. Like, yeah. They're so good. And so the idea that I could bring, but no, I'm flattered, if anything. It's very kind. And I will, I'll take it under consideration.
Don't worry. I just don't want Papa to sue me. That's all.
Okay.
Fine. I'm sure you've had the same worries.
it would be a pleasure. And if I can do it, I'll definitely try.
So if he starts suing you, you're not going to worry or anything. You're just going to fanboy.
Pretty much. I think that's all I've got, man.
What made you decide to, because obviously you have your own music project, Bison, as I mentioned, you've got an album out. What made you decide to make the first Opus medley?
Right, well, I just listened to Opus like nonstop. And in fact, I don't know how other people feel, but when I get into an artist, listen to their debut record, I'm kind of scared about getting into the next album. In a way, because I'm thinking I'm late to the party, but I want it to be better, as good as the first one. Anyway, I was really into Opus and I thought I'd love to do a medley that would kind of give a thanks to the band. And I think what triggered this is, so I was listening to an interview with Papa and he was giving the backstory and I was just so inspired that I thought, well, do you know what? There's so much scope in Opus to bring it out of the era in which it sounds. It sounds kind of 70s. I wanted to give it a bit more fuel, and I thought, well, I'm going to try. And I went to go see them. I went to see them at the Albert Hall. Yeah. I think you were at that gig too.
I was, yeah.
Yeah, man, it was insane. It really did. It was just total game changer.
One of the best gigs I've ever seen in my life.
Oh yeah, I think actually sound wise, I was shocked, man. I was totally shocked how good it was. And that night, I went home buzzing like everyone else did, and I thought, right, I'm going to put this together. And I chose my favorite songs from the album, and I put it together. And I thought, well, I've written the album for Bison. It's recorded, it's getting mixed. And I thought, well, promotionally, if you're starting a music project, I wanted to kind of have something else that wasn't just my own. I think it's important for music groups, bands, whatever, to do covers and say thanks to, you know, their inspirations. I think it's a really cool thing to do. Sometimes it's kind of thought of to be not, you know, the best idea. But I think it's a cool thing to do. I like it anyway. Mm. And I thought, I'm going to put it out there and I'm going to have that as part of, you know, a branch of this Bison project where I say thanks to bands, composers that I really like. And that's how it started. And then it was incredible that it coincided with your podcast, and we spoke briefly, and you asked to use the music, and I was totally flattered because I was a bit of a wreck when it came out because I thought, no one's going to want to hear this, man. So your message was meant a lot to me when I got it.
You doubt yourself way too much, man. Like, seriously, I know that you're saying that you wanted to, you know, you think the band should start, like, you know, release a few covers or whatever to get themselves established, but I think you took the way better approach of covering something but also adding your like proper spin on it.
I wanted to put it into a different dimension. I really did. I thought it's so cool, an album. It's so cool. I love the sound of it. Sonically, it's great, but I just wanted to just like inject it with like how they sounded live. Because when they do those old songs live, they don't sound like the way they do in the
album. Not at all. No, they sound so much better.
And that's kind of one I wanted to chime into. I wanted to get into that and go, you know, thanks, Ghost. Mm. And that's it.
Cool. Well, again, yes, as you said, perfect timings on regards to both of our projects starting up at the same time. And yeah, I think, I don't know if it was like, if you want me to say this, but like, whenever I asked you about doing season two, I had no idea if you had plans to do it. I was just like, I'll take a shot.
No, I didn't. But then my sound guy, Troy, he engineers all the Bison material and he said to me, well, he basically was giving me a nudge as well.
Mm.
And I thought, well, I listened to Infestissimum first off. Like I listened to it like again, whilst I was considering it, I thought this is going to be so much more difficult because it's just such a, it's so colorful an album. It's really, really proggy, which I love. The harmonically speaking, from a musical point, it's got a lot more going on. You can tell the budget was increased a bit. And yeah, I just thought, look, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try and document it. So my vlogs are on my YouTube so you can see how I put it together. And I thought, well, it's an incredible album and I'd love to do it. And it was almost like a challenge. I wanted to see if I could beat the one before. And I obviously just really wanted to please yourself and the other Ghost fans. And I thought, well, look, I'm going to see if I can take it to another level.
Okay, cool. We'll start working on Melio.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Don't need to.
I'm going to get through from the pinnacle to the pit or whatever. I'm going to get out Mummy Dust. I'm going to see. I mean, to be honest, like, I just think I'm actually scared of those songs.
Oh, yeah. They're incredible. Like,
they're just so good, man.
Yeah. So yeah, I want to talk very briefly about your Bison project, as you keep referring to it. Can you sort of fill the listeners in briefly about what the Bison project is?
Yeah,
it's not all Ghost related, is it?
No, not at all. It has been, and unintentionally, I have to say, it's only because I was so flattered and kind of humbled by the reaction I received online by the Ghost community that I thought, wow, this is incredible. I mean, it really was. I mean, the Infestissimum medley was a thank you to yourself and to the other fans and people who had got in touch with me. Because I thought, wow, I mean, that's amazing with support. But the Bison Project, I started in tribute to my late father. He and I had a really amazing relationship, I'm lucky to say. And music was a huge part of the house. This project was basically a way to publish music that I would have been proud to show him. And, you know, I often wrote and recorded music, but never released it. Haven't been in a band ever, but I would just show him. And I just thought, yeah, what do you think of this? And he'd be really encouraging, or he'd say, it sucks. and often, you know, he'd say, yeah, it's okay. And that would, like, you know, either make my day or break me for the week. And but still, so this Bison project, I mean, the name came about, we were looking at names, and Bison was kind of like two sons in one, Bison. I mean, and it was also a play on my star sign, which I'm a Taurus, Spanish heritage, and it just kind of fit. And I just liked how it, I mean, and then basically early on, I wanted to release a piece of work, an album, a self-titled album, which is now on Spotify. You can go ahead and have a listen to it if you like. And it's just the whole piece of work is dedicated to my father. And it's got so many things in there that describe our relationship, his temper, me not necessarily fulfilling my potential in his eyes, or all those types of messed up father-son relationship things that are quite common. But initially it was just a project to release music I wanted to show my dad. And then this branch of the project started, where I would like literally just write music to say thanks to bands.
Well, I think it's a really touching project, and I think that, you know, writing stuff, you know, that you would have wanted to show your dad, regardless of whether he liked it or not, I'm sure he appreciated the fact that you trusted him enough to share that with him. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I came from a household where you sat in front of the hi-fi and you listened to an album beginning to end, turned it at the half point, and it was like, and you listened. And that's a really bizarre thing for many people. Don't do anything, just sit and listen. And that was, and that's kind of dated now. To do that, put a vinyl on, look at the artwork, who's in the band, look at the artwork, you know, all that type of thing, and actually discuss it afterwards. Like, it was just bizarre. But that was just my family. I'm totally lucky. But yeah, I missed that, obviously.
Well, yeah, it sounds like you had a good growing up on music and understanding music, and obviously you teach music. So just as a very music filled life. So just as a very brief aside before we get into the meat and bones of the lyrics, what do you think of the actual song Secular Haze? Because it was Ghost's first music video. So it was one of the things that they were betting on the most to succeed.
Yeah, it's incredible. I remember hearing it and go that. So I felt so impressed that they had taken a chance. They use an unconventional time signature, so the rhythm of it is kind of, it feels different as a song. I like the way that it's playful. It's really playful. It reminded me of the circus, of the carnival. It reminded me of, I mean, I'm looking at the album cover, the Venetian masquerade, kind of like, you know, that was hugely impressive. And the whole song, it's super catchy, really catchy. And I love that idea that comes in after, just before the verse. The whole thing, love it. Really cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. I personally wonder sometimes whether the artwork of the album was designed around this song or was it vice versa, you know?
Yeah, good point.
And also the music video looking like it was shot straight out of the 1970s Black Sabbath. Looked like Ozzy Osbourne could have walked off the set right before they recorded it. It was amazing.
Yeah, no, totally, definitely. It really reminds me of that era. I mean, the band really reminds me of the 70s or ever since I first got into them. I think that's what drew me into it, because I love 70s recordings from the 70s, rock bands from that era. Just the recordings are so good. But yeah, totally. No, I really liked it. I wouldn't say it's my favorite song on the album, but I really appreciate it. Really appreciate it. And it's daring.
It is, yeah. I think the fact that Ghost intentionally tried to make themselves sound like a band that people had just never heard of from, you know, the 70s, 60s, 70s era was a stroke of genius to get people intrigued, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
But obviously their sound has changed a lot. Some would say for the better, some would say for the worse. I'm personally the opinion of they're better, yes or no?
Yeah, I think it's funny, isn't it? They've improved because they've got better chops. So their songwriting has become their ability to get to the point, musically speaking, has improved. So like in the first, if you listen to like Faith, you know, it just hits you at the beginning, bam, and then that you're locked in, Rats from the beginning, bam, and you're more on a journey in these earlier records, I think.
Yeah, agreed. So let's get into the actual meat and bones of the episode.
All right. This is where I proved to be totally...
We got 17 good minutes out of you. We're all right.
Okay. Oh, that's very kind. I'm nervous because I'm thinking, I've listened to your amazing guests before me, and I'm thinking, I'm just not qualified.
You're going
to
be so disappointed at how heavily edited these shows are.
Okay. that's brilliant. I'm relieved.
Okay. So yes, we are doing Secular Haze this week, if that was not clear. I'm just going to do the traditional story recap first, so if you just bear with me. Right, so the story summary so far. What we've discussed in Infestissimum is that there was a 9-month gap between Opus, Eponymous, and Infestissimum, basically to allow the Antichrist to come to maturity within the womb. So the entire album, what we've got right now, is sort of focusing on the pre-birth of the Antichrist. This is when he's just ready to come out, but it hasn't quite happened yet. What we discussed last week was a sort of play on perspective. For the first time, it's one of the bigger players perspective they've had. The church is having a lot more active, in my opinion, the church is having a lot more active roles in the song themselves, and it's coming to fruition that the clergy has become big enough that the church is actively paying attention to them now, and trying to seek out and stop what they're doing, or to stop their plans. That's where we're standing in the story right now. Secular Haze. So the first chorus is, or is it verse? Verse? Chorus?
Yeah, I would say that's a verse, yeah.
Yeah. So the first verse is, you know that the fog is here, omnipresent, when the diseaser sees no cure. You know that the fog is here, omnipresent, when the intents remain obscure, forevermore. Now... Couldn't have picked a harder episode to come on, could you, really? Because a lot of this is ironically enough quite obscure in its meaning.
Absolutely. No, it's so funny. It's so interesting when I listen to previous podcasts and you speak to guests, I've really realized how little religion I had in my house. Mm. So I, when I read these lyrics, I had to kind of think, okay, I think I know what's going on here, but I had to do like quite a bit of research to go, okay, so like even the word omnipresent, I mean, I don't have, that's got nothing to do with what I've just said, but I had to just double check what that meant.
Mm. Yeah, I have to do the same thing. I didn't grow up around religion either. But I want to discuss the usage of the word fog in the song, in throughout the entirety of the song, not just this verse. And more importantly, what I have is like a sort of double meaning, dual meaning that I think it's used with. You have two definitions. So the fog, well, I say two definitions. Both of them are not literal. It's not like a literal fog that's going to, you know, enshroud the world, essentially. In my eyes, it's a metaphorical fog. And one of the things I think it is could be referring to is Satan using his still very limited on earth powers to cloud the judgment of the Church of God, blinding them to the grander plan of the clergy, e.g. the birth of the Antichrist and Lilith, and perhaps even blinding the current followers of the Church of God. That's one of them. The second could be, in fact, that the fog was caused by the general population of the world itself and not Satan. Not a literal one, but very much could be an indication that the balances of power are muddled and that people are confused as to who to follow now, being lost in a muddled fog of thoughts.
Yeah, I think they're both valid. I think they're both very valid. I think my instinct when I read that initial line was, and when I think about fog and how it could be used is, everyone else is the fog. The people who don't, so not people who go to church, not people who basically don't subscribe either way. And and them being the opportunity, because those are the people that are neither, have no allegiance either way.
Are you leaning more towards the second definition where it could be the imbalance of religious power, of religious belief, instead of like a ploy by Satan to shroud the Antichrist?
So I think it's funny, isn't it? Because this is where my initial thought was that I think you're right. Your second one is the one I'm leaning more towards.
Mm. Yeah. Well, let me continue. Let me continue on. I'll try and back up the first point, because the second point I don't think needs much backing up. So what I've got is, the first point is backed up with the other lines of the verse. The diseaser, who I'm going to assume is Satan, is sensing that the clergy need a little help, aka a cure. So when the diseaser sees no cure to fulfill his vision, and intense remained obscure is clear reference to, you know, the general population wouldn't be feeling an intent on anything. It to me, it's a clear reference to a plan, if you know what I mean.
Got you. Okay. Yeah, it's funny because I did not think that at all. Actually, now that I understand you, I know I understand. If anything, I probably lean towards, I see the fog as being manufactured by the Antichrist.
Okay.
And to kind of create vulnerable spirits who don't know or are blind or see the lines of good and evil blurred and to create more followers. If that makes any sense at all, probably not.
No, it does make sense. Yeah. So you think that Satan is the one that's causing the sort of the non-literal fog that's blinding the clergy to both the plan of the Antichrist and the feelings of their followers, which is why they're starting to lose them.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. I was going to say, Forevermore sort of backs up the second argument. It's not a strong back up, but once the trust and belief of people is broken, it's impossible to win it back. So even if the plan fails, even if the Antichrist plan fails, the fog will remain forevermore, because trust is a very fragile thing amongst a church and its followers.
Yeah. What did you have for the diseaser? I mean, was I totally off to think that was God? I don't have no idea.
Honestly, the fact that it was God could have crossed my mind. It did cross my mind as well. But I went with the diseaser is the reference to Satan trying to provide a cure. So his help to the clergy, essentially.
Oh, that's incredible. I totally got the... that's funny, because I thought that the creator would be the diseaser. So God would, like, he creates, you know, humans in people in sin, and we are sinful, and we must, and disease kind of exists on earth regardless.
Yeah.
And if he's the creator of things, then perhaps he's responsible for that too. And because he sees no cure, because there is no cure to that, provides Satan with the perfect opportunity to gain believers in him and more followers the other side.
Yeah, no, again, I had very similar thoughts when I was going into it. I just couldn't make it work with the other arguments that I had in my head. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, totally.
Very valid thoughts. It could be that that is what the line is referring to, but I personally believe that it's Satan, it's the devil, that is being named as the diseaser in this particular circumstance.
Fine, yeah, cool.
Let's move on to the first chorus. So, weave us of mist, fog weaver, hide us in shadows, unfathomable. While this maze, a secular haze.
I tell you what, Niall, you are so good.
I'm not doing that one again. No. I'll edit out the other attempts, but Jesus Christ, that took me so much to say.
Poor thing. Man.
So, my thoughts on this are, it's pretty much as close as we've gotten so far, barring the verse in Ritual, the Our Father Who Art From Hell verse in Ritual, to the clergy communicating directly with Satan. If you want to call it a prayer or a request, probably both would work, to bring on this confusion, to destabilize the church and hide Lilith from them. Would you agree with that sort of general assessment?
I totally thought the same, actually. I thought it sounded like a prayer to me. It reads like a poem, like a prayer. It reads, you know, so well. I thought it was a call from the clergy to the Antichrist to say, look, let us further destabilize the church and let us further distort this haze because it's working so well.
They
wanted to be loyal, in order to prove this, they need to maintain that haze and you know, basically commit themselves.
Yeah, agreed. I do want to discuss, because secular was a really interesting word that I wasn't overly familiar with when I was going into the writing of the song. Did you find anything out about it? I want to ask you just real quick. Did you find anything out about it?
So I was looking at the year that this song was released, and it was, I remember being at uni, 2013, 2012, that kind of year. Was it 2013? I think it might have been. But I was thinking that, you know, this was kind of like the height of like Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, and there was a lot of like backwards and forwards between agnostics, atheists, and the church. And I thought, I wonder whether, you know, that's the haze. That's the backwards and forth. No one knows where to stand, and it's kind of
the secular haze.
I thought, because I mean, what happens is, I mean, you can. To actually be put on the spot and discuss religion is really difficult, because it just is, and it is for a lot, you know, for me particularly, because I don't want to, you know, I'd take a side either way, but it is difficult, and the prominence of these writers like Dawkins, like Hitchens at that time were quite, you know, they're quite impressionable, and you had a lot of people from being kind of agnostic to being quite actively, you know, anti. Yeah. Into your religion, and to me, when I read this song and when I heard this song, it made me think of that brooding division and dissonance between, you know, believers and non-believers.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's definitely what the lyrics were intended to convey, in my opinion. I didn't know what secularism really was before I went into researching this podcast, and I kind of just want to define it for the people listening at home who may not know. In the in its base meaning, so in its original meaning, it doesn't actually preclude or target God in any form. Secularism is essentially keeping the church and the state separate to avoid a theocracy. That's the meaning of secularism. It is the fight against religion having too much power in our society.
Really, France is a secular state.
Yeah, exactly. They don't teach religion in schools. I went to school in France for about 5 years or so. They don't teach any religion in schools. Wow. It's illegal to even talk about it in schools. From a teacher's perspective, obviously, if you're a kid, you can talk about it with your friends or whatever. Mm-hmm. But a teacher is not allowed to talk about any form of religion in school.
Severe.
Yeah, well, it's just, I personally agree with it, but it's for a different show.
No, I do too. But at the same time, it's kind of like, don't let it slip.
Yeah, well, I mean, they can talk about the existence of religion, but they can't talk about the benefits of it and stuff like that. I do want to say, however, that even though I said it does not preclude or target God in any form, I actually did a bit of digging, and from a video I found on YouTube by the Forum of Christian Leaders, The word has evolved into a more modern meaning. So the original meaning is what I gave you. Yep. Essentially, this is what the Forum of Christian Leaders are saying that secularism is nowadays. They're saying, and I quote, "It largely means without God. It means government without God. It means life without God. And it means an education without God," which fits exactly with the plans of the clergy. They don't want to destroy religion. They don't want the secular state because they want their Satanism to be in power. They want their religion to be in power. They just want to destroy Christianity.
Yeah, that totally fits squarely in the kind of the nuance of the song. Like, totally. Yeah, that's really cool. That's they've even invaded this forum as well.
Yeah,
they've influenced this forum as well. Amazing.
Yeah. So moving on, is there anything else you need to add?
No, but I did. I really liked the "Hide Us in Shadows." I really liked that. I just really liked that's kind of like the character of the clergy, you know, kind of hiding, well, you know, not to be seen, but they're still influencing. And that's kind of what that's kind of a feeling of a haze. You're not really sure where it comes from, but it's influencing you.
Yeah.
But no, I'm happy to move on.
Yeah, okay, cool. Next verse. "You know that his son is near, omnipotent, when she sees eye to eye with spears. You know that his son is near, omnipotent, when youth and innocence disappear, forever lost."
Love it.
This verse, to discuss this verse, I will need to put into the context a couple of the songs coming forward, like going on. It's sort of prophetic of events to come, in my opinion, of surrounding the Antichrist. So I'll just take it line by line here. "It is my strong belief that when she says eye to eye with spears," or when they say eye to eye with spears, it's referring to the inevitable outcome of Lilith's death during the birthing of the Antichrist, which actually leads us really nicely into the next episode, Gigolo, which I won't spoil ahead of time. "When youth and innocence disappear and are forever lost" could be referring to the Antichrist maturing and coming into his power, perhaps even at birth, or it could be referring to the youth and innocence of mankind as they are about to betray God. So that's what I've got from that. What about you?
Well, I read it and I immediately thought of possession for some reason. I had this artwork by the official artwork by Balak in mind, where there's like the Antichrist kind of behind this woman and he's got spikes, and I just thought, you know, it's like when you see like a possession movie, they kind of see the devil, and when I read see eye to eye, I just immediately thought that. But the other thing as well is with the youth and innocence is kind of like, that's the perfect vessel to influence. Which made me also think of possession, but I might be way off though. Sorry.
What you're bringing up has, you know, a strong, how do you say it? It's a strong spiritual thing. It's not really a strong religious thing. I mean, it could certainly be referring to that. It could be the possession, not of like a spirit or a ghost or whatever, but the possession of the idea of Satan spreading from the population could be something that it's referring to. If you want to talk about possession, not maybe as a thing for our poltergeist or whatever, but if you want to talk possession of an idea, of a brain, of a mind, then an idea is the best way to do it.
Well, yeah, it just kind of fit, for me, it just fit like squarely into like the luring of the song, the way that it's so characterful, it's playful, it's like, come here and then, you know, you regret it later.
It's like the child catcher of...
Yeah, it's Pennywise.
Of songs.
It really is. It's the Pennywise. It always reminded me of that. And that's, I've seen far too many horror movies. I just always think... But yeah, and also you know, looking at the artwork, it just made me think of that. But yeah.
I definitely think the entire song has a sort of, as you said, a feeling of childlike invitedness. Like it is the stranger that your parents warn you not to play with, essentially. You know what I mean? that is what this song is. It is the evil stranger that you think is a very nice person, but is actually really the devil, essentially. Well, I have nothing really more to add to that. So do you want to move on?
Yeah.
Cool. And then I'll just skip the chorus. We don't need to hear that again.
I want to hear you read it out again, though.
Nope, I don't want to hear it. Okay, unfathomable.
Hey, that was fantastic.
Unfathomable. So next verse. "He is divinity, omniscient." Jesus, that's also hard to say. "Seeing the world revolve with spite, the surge of humanity oblivious to the divine bringeth light. Let there be night. I love that last line, by the way. It's so good. It's amazing. It's
really good. Such
a powerful line. So what I've got here is this verse to me could be from two perspectives of the psalm. So one, it could be the perspective of the clergy, Papa's clergy, and Satan, praising Satan for his omniscient power, who has decided to act due to the corruption / perceived evil of God, spite.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they refer to revolve with spite. That would be the corruption / evil of God. Yeah. And observing the changing of attitudes of the populace. And obviously the surge of humanity oblivious and stuff. That is referencing the fact that, as I said earlier, the minds of the general population are starting to change in the world.
Yeah.
It could also be a verse sung from the perspective of God / the Church of God and topped off by the clergy. This could be some sort of, how would you say it? This could be a sort of counter prayer in order to halt the efforts of the clergy / Satan, with repeated references to divinity and light, which isn't really something that the clergy and Papa often refer to Satan. They're normally pretty good on keeping him being the bringer of night and not being divine, which is then extinguished by the clergy's more powerful request of let there be night. So essentially the first four lines of it, so he is divinity, seeing the world revolve with spite, the surge of humanity, and to the divine bringeth light, and then it gets crushed out by the clergy's more powerful prayer.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting, like a backwards and forwards, like a call and response. Very interesting. And it kind of reads, it looking at it, it kind of reads that way. Mm. It's not what I got, but that makes that makes to, I mean, I think that's much better. So yeah, it's I kind of chose to think that this was again another little prayer.
Mm-hmm.
By the clergy, and it was. And I think the bringeth of bringing, is it bringeth?
Well, I say bringeth.
I said bringeth, but now in this moment, I've just looked at it and gone, have I not typed that correctly?
I think it's bringeth. I don't think bringeth is a word. Okay. I think whoever's typed out the lyrics has misspelled it.
Okay, fine. I understood that to mean like the empowerment, to empower us.
Yeah.
Let us do your bidding. And then the let there be night. Well, it's kind of, game on. let us go into the shadows and start serving. But I think very interesting seeing the world revolve around spite. I think it was kind of like an aerial view of humanity,
which I think adds a bit of visual credence to the whole perspective that it could be from God's perspective and the church's perspective in the first four lines anyway.
That makes total sense.
Cool.
Interesting. Cool.
As I said before in the previous episode and stuff, there is a lot of perspective play in these first couple of songs. Like Gigolo, the next song, and even Goulet, they are not sung by characters that we've heard sing before, mm-hmm. in my opinion, but I'll not spoil that for you guys because you get to tune in, hear it for yourselves. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think with that then, unless you want to discuss Come Mist Eternal, but I'm fairly certain.
I'm not sure. I'm already at full stretch intellectually. So this has really put me to the test. This is unbelievable. The amount of analysis and depth you go in. I'm listening because I usually listen to it on my run round, and I'm thinking, oh my days, I need to do some reading. You guys are unbelievable. You're unbelievable. Honestly, it's great.
No, thank you. You've been a fantastic guest, and some of your ideas and stuff have like really it's good to have counterpoints. It's good to just not have someone run. I'm not saying any of my previous guests have done this. I'm just saying it's good to have someone to not just go, oh yeah, no, you're completely right. I like the fact that you're putting in different perspectives on things. Yeah. It's good for the show. It's good for me.
I'm a huge movie fan. So this whole album, I'm just thinking about Eyes Wide Shut. That kind of
that's fair. Yeah.
I'm just thinking this is so playful. And as an album, Infestissimum is so, as I said before, it's such a colorful album and it really is it's like, follow the piper type of thing, alluring potential followers and taking advantage of people's kind of indecision or lack of belief. It's really, really amazing. And the song, I mean, as I mentioned, I did actually record this song for the medley, but I strangely, maybe you know, I'm starting to understand maybe more now why I couldn't fit it into the medley, given how complicated it is.
But it's not musically, it's not like any of the other songs either. So it just wouldn't, I completely understand it wouldn't have flown into it.
Interesting because it's in waltz timing. I mean, I'm not sure. I think it's in 6-8 or 3-4, sorry. But I think I went for 6-8 when I was putting it together. But that's waltz timing, which is kind of like what you'd expect in the, you know, a Venetian ball.
Mm.
Yeah, really good.
Finally, the listeners of this music podcast are getting some actual music knowledge. What a day.
Unbelievable. Finally. I don't want to go any further, but harmonically, it's really, when I put this together, that's one thing I really enjoyed about doing the Emphysis medley, is like kind of seeing the development of the ideas and harmonically what's going on is just much more complicated.
Agreed.
Much more sophisticated, and from that point of view, you know, I can appreciate it much more.
Agreed. No, they definitely took a step up from Opus. But I think with that, then it's time to end the episode. Thank you very much for joining me, Hector.
You're very kind.
Obviously, providing me the bomb ass theme music that you've recorded for us. Well, not just for us, but you know, for letting me use it and stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was delighted to receive your message, and thank you so much for having me on. And I'm gonna try and pay even more attention to incredible. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, man. Where can they find you on social media? I do have a link to @Bison Music on the descriptions of the show. So yeah, if you just want to say it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got bisonmusic.uk is my Instagram tag and also my Twitter tag. And on Spotify, I think if you go to either page, Twitter or Instagram, you'll see a direct link to my Spotify and my YouTube page, where you'll find vlogs of this latest medley that I did. Perhaps future vlogs of a Meliora medley. Who knows? I might have to start now. It might be ready for 2022. Who knows?
All these 2.5K listeners I have, I'm going to get them to swamp your inbox.
Oh, well, I'd have to do it then. Please don't. Thank you so much, Niall.
No, thank you very much for joining me, Hector. And thank you guys for listening. I will see you guys in around 2 weeks' time for the next episode, Gigolo Har Megiddo. Heel sitting.